It's done, but the story is far from over. Before the first Doctor joins the 12th Doctor in Twice Upon a Time, we're taking a look back at the 10th planet. This is This Week in Time Travel for Tuesday, December 19th. From both of our country's coasts, this is Chip and Alyssa, and this is This Week in Time Travel.
Hello from the sunny and slightly smoky Western California coast.
All of our hopes to everybody in Southern California. Goodness.
Yes, thank you. But it is good to be back here, to be with my family, and to be looking ahead to Twice Upon a Time next week.
Yeah, and we got a little additional help from the BBC for looking forward to Twice Upon a Time. Let's launch into the news with a minute of TARDIS hilarity that was provided to us. It's a brand new clip, and hopefully the last clip before the episode drops in less than a week when this episode is released.
Is someone feeling a little bit overwhelmed with spoilers?
I don't think they're spoilers. I hold to the Radio Free Scarrow definition of spoiler, which is if it was released by an official outlet, it's by definition not a spoiler. But I do wonder if I'm being a little too aggressively marketed at.
I'm certainly in favor of being catered to heavily. I don't know that this clip necessarily needed to get released. It is a fun clip. It is a nice clip. The idea of the 12th Doctor calling the first Doctor Mary Berry had me laughing literally on the floor. So, you know, I did appreciate that. But guys, hold something back for us.
Yeah, I will say that one thing that I appreciated and yet am very curious about is that this trailer gives us a Bill who is completely and totally recognizable as the Bill who has traveled with the Doctor in all 12 of the previous episodes in Series 10. And seems none the worse the wear for her experiences in World Enough in Time, and doesn't look particularly like a water person.
I'm very curious to see how they are bringing her back and how this is all going to work. How long has she been away from the Doctor before she's coming back? It's all very interesting, but there's some lovely in-jokes for fans in the little clip. There's two different TARDISes. There's the classic first Doctor TARDIS again. There's even a comment about how the windows are the wrong size, which made the Clayton Hickmans of Twitter very happy.
That is the Moffat go-to trolling the fanboys joke right there. I am impatient for Christmas to get here. I'm impatient to see this story. I am impatient to see Jodie Whittaker, et cetera, and so on. But these commercials, just like all of the trailer releases for The Last Jedi and things like that, that certain fans were just assiduously avoiding, they are not for us. They are not releasing them for our personal benefit. They are trying to get eyeballs onto the show. And you don't do that without marketing, and you don't get any benefit from just releasing the same footage over and over again.
Alas, no, but I'll be keeping my eyes studiously away from Twitter as we get too much closer to the Christmas special. Speaking of waiting for things for Christmas, I'm sure there's plenty of us that have VR headsets on our Christmas wish lists. And if you do happen to pick up a VR headset between now and Christmas, Doctor Who Time Vortex game is being re-released for any virtual reality headset that is out on the market today. So you'll get to whiz through the Time Vortex in virtual reality, which honestly makes me wonder if that would just give me motion sickness.
Possibly. And this is a rewrite of a game that we've mentioned on This Week in Time Travel before. And it's basically just sort of this like these endless runner type games, except it's a, instead of a character running down an endless series of corridors or whatever, it is the TARDIS flying down the time vortex and dodging obstacles, which is, it's not exactly a Doctor Who event that is replicating something that you've seen on television. It's just basically a cute game. And they've just fixed it so that you can wear a VR headset and feel like you're, I guess, falling through the time vortex behind the TARDIS itself.
They do say that they are going to have different vortexes from different eras of Doctor Who, which just makes me wonder, are we just going to be falling through a Tom Baker-shaped vortex? Like, is that going to happen? Are we going to be, like, falling through Colin Baker's face and Peter Capaldi's eyes?
Now, that is profoundly creepy and disturbing.
I apologize for giving everybody else this mental image. I'm very tired, and I probably shouldn't be speaking. And yet, here we are.
Well, if you're falling through the John Pertwee-shaped time vortex, if it's his last season and he's got his arms crossed, is the crossed arms John Pertwee an obstacle that must be avoided? I'm wondering. He does look kind of forbidding in that shot.
Duck over the cloak! Duck under the cloak!
There couldn't be a more authentically Doctor Who game experience than that, let me tell you. And finally, for those of you who are attending the Gallifrey One convention, and if you're listening to this podcast, that's probably a non-zero number of you, the announcement has been made, the invitation. If you want to be on any of the discussion panels at Galley, now's your chance.
Yep, they are looking for panelists. Deadline to apply to be a panelist is January 1st, 2018. That sounds really far off, but actually just a few weeks away. And you do really want to get in on this. I have been a panelist about every year that I've been to Gallifrey One, and I've really enjoyed the experience. There have been some fantastic conversations. In the past, I have submitted a few panel ideas. I didn't do it this year, but there are some really excellent panels that have been proposed, and they have specifically made a call this year to invite new voices to come up and speak on the panelists. You'll notice that a lot of the panels specifically encourage teenagers and young adults to apply to really speak on a panel for the first time. There's lots of panels in which they're looking for diverse voices, including a panel specifically to discuss queer people in Doctor Who. So if you are a queer person at all on the LGBTQIA+ spectrum, definitely put your name in the hat. You know, I love speaking and being a panelist every single year, but really want to bring in some new voices. So I also want to offer myself up as a resource here. If you are interested being a panelist, but you've never done it before, you're a little unsure, you're a little nervous about how to do it, find me on Twitter, Whovian Feminism, or send me a question through Tumblr. I can respond privately to you there if you would like to do that. And I'm more than willing to give you any help and advice that you need about how to craft the best panel application possible, so that way you stand out in the crowd and you are on the top of their list to speak on all of the different panels that you would like to speak on, and really give you sort of an insight into what you're getting into when you sign up to be on a panel. You've done it before a lot of times too, haven't you, Chip?
I have. And Galley, being the premier fan-run Doctor Who convention, it's always had the best panel programming, and a lot of people really want to participate. Some of them may be too intimidated to apply because it's so crowded. And one thing that it's easy to remember, whether you're talking about fan conventions or anywhere else, a lot of people who look and sound like me tend to evaluate their fitness for a panel much more highly than people who have not been represented on panels a lot before. The surest way to make sure that Doctor Who panels reflect the makeup of today's Doctor Who fandom is for you to put yourself out there and volunteer to be on one. So Alyssa's offered herself up as a bit of a panel career counselor here.
Yep. consider me your college guidance counselor, open at every time for advice, which I hope is reasonable and accurate and fair and will get you a spot on the panel that you want to be on.
The folks at Gallifrey One have a lot invested in making sure that the panels are really top notch. And one way to do that is to give them a lot of good options to choose from. So don't be shy. Sign up, volunteer. You'll have a great time. So light news this week, because, of course, all of the news is happening next week with the release of Twice Upon a Time. After we check out what else is happening on the Incomparable Network, we're going to dig into the classic series episode that Twice Upon a Time will basically be marinating in, The Tenth Planet.
This week on the Incomparable Network,
a little indie movie called The Last Jedi just came out. Jason Snell and his regular Star Wars panel took it on in last Saturday's episode, and Alyssa and I will follow it up with an all-star panel of Doctor Who podcasters. Last Jedi reviewed and reviewed and reviewed on The Incomparable.
Sophomore Lit with John McCoy gets Dickensian with A Tale of Two Cities.
And Tim and Jason go over the best shows of 2017 on TV Talk Machine.
All this and more at theincomparable.com. So I last watched The Tenth Planet probably a year and a half ago, and it was really interesting watching it again, especially post World Enough in Time and The Doctor Falls, seeing the Mondasian Cybermen again in a new light. But especially now knowing that we are going to be having the First Doctor with us, it was really interesting to sort of see him again in a new light, because I'm now subconsciously comparing William Hartnell's performance to David Bradley's performance. Chip, when did you first see The Tenth Planet, and how did you feel watching it again?
Well, the word again is inoperative, because I watched The Tenth Planet for the first time in preparation for this very podcast.
Really? I somehow missed that. I didn't realize this was going to be your first time.
Yeah. I've got some serious gaps in my classic Doctor Who history. And my only excuse there is that I'm crazy busy. And I do like Deb Stanish's philosophy that if she slows down and just watches them for the first time before the related episode of the Verity podcast, that, you know, that helps keep it fresh. So I'm not going into overdrive to keep up. But yeah, this was my very first time watching The Tenth Planet. I am fascinated by the decision to, as we've seen from the trailers and the clips, there's a lot of The Tenth Planet stuff happening in here. We've seen a morphing shot of William Hartnell turning into David Bradley delivering the line about, "Have you no emotions, sir," from The Tenth Planet. So we know that there's a lot going on here. And what really surprised me about watching The Tenth Planet for the first time was, for a story that has the regeneration and replacement of our lead character, it feels like such a slight story. Even with the introduction of the Cybermen, it's very much of its time.
It is a pretty compact story in that it's, you know, the classic base under siege kind of model, although this is still pretty new. We are just, you know, really turning into the Patrick Troughton era, where it becomes an even bigger story model. But the action is pretty constrained to one location. There are big interplanetary conflicts happening, but we don't really see that conflict play out across the world. You know, you see one moment of that, really, and you hear conversation about it. But we're very, very focused on one location, one story. And a lot of the drama is emotional, psychological. You know, most of the incredibly tense moments that happen in this story come because Polly and the Cybermen are arguing about what it means to be human, about whether they are too incompatible to even coexist with each other, about the value of life. And it's an incredibly fascinating and dramatic and impactful argument that they are having. Like, it's the very first Cybermen episode, and these are still sort of the same themes that they keep going back to because they are so crucial and foundational to the existence of these villains. And I think one of the reasons it also feels very compact is there's very little William Hartnell in this.
Yeah.
He's, in fact, not in the third episode at all. The Monday before filming happened, he sent in a telegram and said that he was too ill. And the story had apparently been deliberately written so that should that happen, or should he simply just be too ill to really be doing what was required of him during filming, that there wouldn't be too much for him to do. A lot of his lines get passed on to Ben to really sort of carry the dramatic heft of this story.
He is more present, of course, in the first two episodes. And when he is on, he feels very doctorish to me. He feels authoritative. He feels sharp. He feels like the doctor. And I was impressed. It's a difference, you know, among the Hartnell episodes that I've seen. You know, my favorite is the Aztecs. But in the Aztecs, he's sort of playing the role of the scold. In the 10th Planet, when he's on, you know, he knows what's coming. He knows the future. He knows what Mandas is. I love the way that he writes down what's going on and hands off that note before the reveal, which is sort of a proof of his knowledge and power and stuff like that. And that is really cool. It made me want more of him. And it was obvious that, you know, he couldn't because of his health and all that. But in these first two episodes, I feel like I am seeing the same doctor that I've been watching all along. He does sort of have that moral center and power about him, I thought.
Yeah. I was also watching this with a particular eye for William Hartnell and David Bradley's respective performances because, you know, I was watching David Bradley play William Hartnell, play the Doctor in An Adventure in Space and Time. And it was a really incredible performance. And then just watching him in the few clips that we have playing the Doctor, not William Hartnell playing the Doctor, has been really fascinating because he really gives a sense of Hartnell's performance without mimicry. You know, you watch him and it feels like watching Hartnell. It feels like watching the first Doctor. And yet you can see with that "Have you no emotion, sir," where their differences are, how they are playing those scenes so similarly and yet so differently, those subtle shifts of intonation, that performance of how they are putting that emotional impact in that line. It's just, it's slightly different, and yet Bradley's performance feels very authentic. It feels real. It feels like you could drop him in at any point in the episode and it would fit, which is actually where my theory comes in, because
theory?
My original thought was that, so there's a moment, at least the animation makes it feel like you don't really see him. The Doctor walks out of the Cyberman spaceship to head to the TARDIS, and Ben and Polly are sort of left behind. And then when you next see them, Ben and Polly are banging on the TARDIS doors trying to get in because the Doctor is in there and they are locked out and he is beginning to regenerate and doesn't, like, it's like he's fighting against something to be able to open the doors to let them in. And I thought this episode would sort of take place in that moment, in that little gap there where he is walking to his TARDIS, stumbles upon the 12th Doctor, and that's where this all happens. I wonder, though, if they are going to basically retcon and say, you know, well, where was William Hartnell during that third episode. He wasn't ill. He was off having some other adventure with the 12th Doctor over here. Because it does feel like that. It does feel like you could just slot David Bradley in into that, you know, missing third episode. No, not missing. The fourth one is missing, not the third one. But like that missing spot for William Hartnell in that third episode. And it would make total sense.
Maybe, maybe. To your point about slotting in Bradley for Hartnell and it feeling sort of seamless for you, I'm beginning to question that for myself a little bit, because there is one thing that Hartnell brings to his performance of the First Doctor that I haven't seen in Bradley's clips that and snippets that we've seen so far from this episode, and that's a sort of sharpness. David Bradley's First Doctor seems kind of irascible, but there is something about Hartnell that feels a little more forbidding to me.
I wonder if that's because they are playing up right now the humor of the First and the 12th Doctor being together, because that's what you want out of a multi-doctor story, is to have that humor of dandy clown, scarecrow, name-calling, sand shoes, and they are holding back on those sharp moments, probably because they're the most dramatic moments of the episode that they don't want to give away early.
Yeah, possibly, possibly. But the difference in delivery on the "Have you no emotions, sir" line, there's a sort of smug superiority in Hartnell's delivery. And with Bradley, it's more like, I don't know, quizzical?
I can see that, although the smug superiority is, I mean, it's definitely something that comes from Hartnell a lot, but it's never one of my favorite Hartnell qualities.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, there is something even in this episode where Hartnell's not terribly present that comes across that can be fairly patronizing. You know, I was watching this story, and, you know, there's Polly being expected to fetch the doctor's coat and everything at the beginning. And Polly has to deal with a lot of that sort of institutional patronization, and she does it in very interesting ways. You know, with the doctor, she's just sort of, you know, oh yes, you know, this is my weird alien friend and I'll just go along to get along. With Cutler, it's a little more interesting. She seems to manipulate it in order to have an advantage in the situation. You know, Ben and the doctor have been kicked out, and they've, you know, Polly is meant to stay behind to try to do what she can in this situation. And how does she get Cutler to let her stay? She offers to make coffee. So there's a little manipulation of the institutional sexism to get what she wants out of that situation. So I'm curious, you know, there's been some conversation online about Moffat saying, you know, there's going to be a little more calling out the First Doctor for his behavior in this story. So I'm very interested to see how that ultimately plays out and how they handle the smug superiority and the patronizing and, I mean, frankly, some of the sexism that you see in this era. I it could go any number of ways. I'm hoping it's not overdone, because I think the sexism of that era is really emphasized in a way that, like, it exists, but people always mention it in a way that feels disproportional to what you see on screen. And it certainly can be done pretty terribly. You know, I think everyone and their mother has talked about the five doctors and how, you know, the new First Doctor comes in and, you know, he's just ordering Tegan around and asking, you know, demanding that she get them tea and things like that. And she wants to be affronted and confront him about his behavior. And Turlough and the Fifth Doctor are really just sort of demanding that she go along to get along in that situation. And she's made to sort of bite her tongue and do as he says. So it sounds like at least we're not going that route in Twice Upon a Time, especially because Moffat has said, you know, what we should be getting out of this is the 12th Doctor is sort of, you know, embarrassed by the First Doctor's behavior at points. And perhaps this is what inspires him to take a more progressive turn with his next regeneration.
And boy, if that is played out, even as just like subtext, you know, even if they don't make it just absolutely explicit, that's going to upset some fanboys, I have the feeling.
Well, they know where to find me on the internet.
Another thing that struck me about the 10th planet is, and we don't get a clear sense of it because the fourth episode is an animated reconstruction, but the difference in Hartnell's performances between episodes 1 and 2 and episode 4 is very stark. Hartnell is clearly not well. He delivers the line about the doctor's body wearing thin, and it's almost sort of painful to hear, which I think makes the regeneration all the more poignant. I mean, I don't know how much the people watching Doctor Who in 1966 would have picked up on this on their small, blurry television sets and with a certain limitation on the available news that was out there. But it is a passing of the torch in more ways than one.
It is. And I thought I was looking into some of the behind the scenes facts about this episode as I was preparing for this podcast. And one thing I discovered that I hadn't known before is that what's on screen, that's good, keep warm. That was not actually intended to be the First Doctor's final words. What the First Doctor's final words were supposed to be something similar to, no, I simply will not give in, which is real fascinating based off of what we know about the 12th Doctor and where he is in his regeneration. And they seem to really be leaning back into what his last words were supposed to be, what the First Doctor's last words were intended to be, and playing up that aspect of his regeneration more in Twice Upon a Time to, you know, sort of let that moment live a little bit where it couldn't beforehand.
There are definitely some lines that are meant to imply that the Doctor knows what's coming.
Mm-hmm. I'm also curious to see if they ever say anything about what sort of causes it. Is it simply, are we just going to stick with the existing assumption that he was just worn and old and this is almost like a Doctor dying of old age? Or, you know, what really triggers this regeneration?
You know, I still come back to the first question that I had, Alyssa, about, you know, is the 10th planet a strong enough story that it makes sense to do such a direct callback with Peter Capaldi's last episode? Or is it really all about the fact of the First Doctor and the first regeneration sequence?
You know, I don't even know if it's necessarily about the strength of the story so much as the strength of the moment. Because, you know, what makes this iconic is it's the first Cyberman story. And Moffat, for the last season finale, wanted to go back and do more about the origin of the Cybermen. So you have, you know, similar stories being paralleled. And it is an iconic regeneration. And I don't believe that Moffat knew for certain that the next Doctor was going to be Jodie Whittaker when he was in the planning stages of The Doctor Falls and World Enough in Time, to the point that, you know, he would have to know that the First Doctor was going to be in it and start making negotiations with David Bradley. But I wonder, the timing is hard to pin down because he doesn't ever tell you straight up what he suspected and when. But I wonder if he did suspect that the next Doctor was going to be a woman by the point that he was thinking about having the First Doctor back, and whether, because this is such an iconic regeneration moment again, that bringing it back to that first iconic regeneration of the one that really set this series off and running, is that's what makes this so particularly significant of a story. That's what we want to be coming back to, of rebirth, regeneration, a new opportunity to make this show new and special.
As you say, it's the first Cyberman story, and the look of the Cybermen is lovingly reinterpreted by Rachel Talalay and her costume designers. We are presuming that they will be back, although we don't actually know for how much of Twice Upon a Time. One thing that the Cybermen had going for them in this story that I don't think that they had in much of World Enough of Time and The Doctor Falls was at several points you can see the eyes and the mouths behind the masks, and that is genuinely creepy. Genuinely creepy.
Yeah, I think I'm curious to see how much they recreate from the 10th planet. I think that they have the costume, so they're probably going to be in it to a certain extent. I wonder if they'll make any changes just because these technically are different Cybermen. I also am curious how much of the First Doctor's regeneration scene they're going to recreate, because it mostly exists in some not terribly great footage that was saved when they were discussing regeneration, I believe, on Blue Peter.
Yes.
But Stephen Moffat, being the completionist that he is, might go, look at me, I've got brand new modern cameras and an actor here who can do it, so we're going to recreate it on the best footage possible, because completionist.
Yeah, there has been one clip in one of the trailers that showed Polly with the Doctor and the Doctor's hand beginning, the First Doctor, and the First Doctor's hand beginning to glow a little bit with the same sort of regeneration energy that we have seen since 2005.
Oh, that's going to really make people mad.
Well, I can't imagine. We've got the footage. We've got the roadmap. The First Doctor is going to lie on the floor and is going to regenerate. I just can't see them. I just can't see them undoing that.
Yeah, I don't know which part of the fanboy instinct is going to win out here.
Yeah. And you know that Stephen Moffat has both of those fanboy instincts at war within himself, the
yes.
instinct to homage and the instinct to retcon or improve and deepen. You know, he seems to be perpetually waffling between the two.
Yeah, I'm curious which is going to win out.
I enjoyed watching The 10th Planet, but it was not the most compelling classic Doctor Who experience I've had. And I'm embarrassed to say that on two successive nights, I watched episodes before going to bed and actually nodded off towards the end and had to refresh myself at the following morning to make sure that I hadn't missed some stuff. The pacing of it, the very BBC studio nature of classic Doctor Who, that's a struggle for me sometimes. Base under siege when you've got a fleet of spaceships in formation, but it's this 1966 studio budgets, you know, it's hard. It's a hard story to tell. There's some great character stuff going on throughout these episodes, but I think Twice Upon a Time is going to feel just a little pacier than this.
Well, I never thought that I'd be in this position of being the person more forcefully advocating for the First Doctor era in a conversation. But this, for me, was, I think, one of the more compelling episodes of the First Doctor era. This is, I think, an episode that I still like going back to. It's well done with the resources that they have. It's a fascinating psychological story. And it's just one of those truly iconic stories that will continue to persist because it did something truly incredible, which is give this show new legs to run on. And it's still running today. So I love it, and I am very curious to see what happens to it in Twice Upon a Time.
Many people have noted that changing the actor is just the most audacious act possible, and how fitting that you pair it with a modern Christmas special that is about to set up an even more audacious change.
It is just perfectly fitting. And I'm really happy to see them come back to what really makes this show iconic. We'll be back next week after the Christmas special to talk about Twice Upon a Time and our new doctor, Jodie Whittaker.
Am I going to have to airlift whiskey to you?
Oh, honey, I've already got the whiskey. I am stocked and prepared.
You're going to be okay. You're going to be so happy with Jodie Whittaker. You're going to be just fine.
I will be a sobbing mess and I will enjoy every goddamn minute of it.
Oh, listen, you can find more of our episodes at thisweekintimetravel.com. We tweet at Dr. Who this week. Please follow us. I am also tweeting at numeral 2 minute time lord. Alyssa tweets and tumbles at Whovian Feminism. We're on Facebook, and we'd also love it if you'd leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
This Week in Time Travel is hosted by Jason Snell's The Incomparable Network. You can support our show by becoming a member and ticking the box for This Week in Time Travel and any other incomparable shows you like at theincomparable.com/members. So thanks! Thanks also to Christopher Breen for our original theme music, to David J. Lohr for our original podcast logo and avatar.
We look forward to talking with you about Twice Upon a Time next time on This Week in Time Travel.
Bye-bye.